Hey, Shavuot, hello, everyone. I want to welcome everyone to Beth Abraham's annual Tikkun Leil Shana Rabbah. First, I want to not taking Rabbi Neuberger's spot, Chas v'Shalom. Rabbi Neuberger is doing Birkat Cholam. Hopefully, he'll be here shortly. But he asked that we begin without him. It's our pleasure and privilege to welcome Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Kantorfogel to give us our shiur this evening. Kantorfogel, of course, well known in the community as Rav of Beth Aaron. We're in Beth Abraham now. Beth Aaron, it's the two shuls I've been in my life in this community. Beth Aaron for almost 20 years, and of course as a dean and professor in Stern, in Revel, and one of the foremost researchers on the period of the Baalei Tosfot. And it's a personal privilege for me, having sat in Rabbi Kantorfogel's shul for many, many years. As my first Gemara teacher, once upon a time, even before there was the current building or the building before that in Beth Aaron. And one of the things that I've always appreciated is for all of the overwhelming wealth of information that the Rabbi Kantorfogel brings into every shiur, still has that ability to present in a way that everyone in the room is able to really get every single thing that they can out of it. As deep and as complex as a topic might be, it still comes across with just a tremendous sense of organization and of real fluidity. And I remember as a young child, as a teenager, and as an adult, really benefiting from that, and hopefully we will all have that privilege tonight. So without further ado, I'd like to ask Rabbi Kantorfogel to address us this evening.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think Rabbi Dr. Aaron remembers the Gemara shiur for the young fellows. We had quite an interesting little group, and most of them, I think all of them, Ruben Kekulam, went on to be Machanchim and Lamdonim, and it was really really very gratifying. So you have to be able to pick the shiurim very correctly. So it's very nice to be here. Actually, this is the second time that I was here. I won't ask you what I talked about the first time, because you probably don't remember. It wasn't very momentous, but I remember, and it was a very nice, somebody's raising his hand. All right, we'll ask you later. Anyway, Leil Hoshana Rabbah, of course, a critical time for Torah learning in particular. And we will actually see as we go through, the talk itself is not a Sukkot talk or a Hoshana Rabbah talk or a Shmini Atzeres talk, but we're in that night where is it good Vach, a good Ner of Yom Tov, a good Kvittel, and the answer is yes. But we will see some Sukkot themes coming through the Shiur, and actually if I can remind myself at the very end, I will actually hook up some of the things that hopefully we'll learn a little bit anew tonight with Hoshana Rabbah as well. So let's get right into it. Dreams and halacha, so you can go in about 12 directions. The direction in which we will go, we'll start in media reis. We'll start, jump right into the middle. If you look at sources number 1 and 2, two tshuvas of the Radvaz. And we'll define the topic very quickly this way. Radvaz or David ibn Zimra, roughly contemporary with the Mechaber, very similar geographic sweep as well. And of course the Radvaz, we have hundreds of tshuvas, maybe more than 1,000. Radvaz doesn't need my haskama, as a posek mufak, and his tshuvas are quoted ubiquitously by Ashkenazim and Sfardim who come after him. Just to show you two tshuvas, and again, I just gave you, forgive me, these are all cut and paste, and I like to do it the old-fashioned way. Again, that's how I was trained in the late Middle Ages, but I'd like you to see the Sfarim. But please, these are your marmakomos to keep, and if you want to go and hunt through them, you're encouraged to do so. So I'm taking the sort of chutzpah of giving you snippets, but these will not be snippets that will mislead, chas v'shalom, just to save time. Two shilas, again, interesting shilas, important shilas. Not once-in-a-lifetime shilas, but what he says seems to be very unusual. The first shila, something that actually, an inyan of Yom Noroyim that sort of just passed, although we're still holding on, about saying either Yud Gimel Midos or the Kedusha de Sidra, Kodosh, 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 do you need a minyan for those recitations? Very important shilah in halacha. It's a tshuva's harashba that the Radvaz ends up mentioning and so on. But if you look at the beginning of the tshuva, where I have it underlined, when he is asked about whether you need a minyan for these very important recitations, Kfar shol davar zeh echad min hagdolim b'chochmas hakabola, he says you should know, this question was already asked by a great gadol who's an expert in Kabbalah, in mysticism, Shmo Rabbi Yaakov, the Hoya Shoel min hashamayim. It's a very mystical way of asking the question. effect from Himmel. He asked the questions to heaven. Now, if somebody tells you they're asking a question from heaven, you would say to them, you know, feel better and call me tomorrow. The problem is that, of course, lo b'shamayim hi, what, first of all, what's going on here? We'll see a little bit more as we go. But the interesting thing is the Radvaz quotes the answer that he got, v'heishivuhu. From heaven they answered him. We'll see who they are, right? You think in heaven is, you know, echad elokeinu shebashamayim, right? You know, echad elokeinu, that's Pesach, wrong moed, but right idea, right? Heshivuhu she'osir liyochid la'omrom. No, Yud Gimel Midos cannot be said by an individual. We know la halacha, right? You have to lane it and so on, all kinds of shittas that we have. Shem devarim shebekedusha. And again, it's a chachmei sfarad, even kodesh, not in kedusha, may be treated that way. Ein liyochid la'omer b'loshen harami, right? That's the translation into Aramaic of the kedusha, the siddur that we have in Uvol Tzion, and so on and so forth. So the Radvaz, who, by the way, if you'll ask, well, was the Radvaz a makubal? Not as far as we know. He knew Chachmas HaKabbalah. The Radvaz was asked about why we take off our tefillin. The men take off the tefillin Rosh Chodesh for Musaf. And he says, I could give you an answer from the Kabbalistic work, Sefer Kana Upliya, but Asur Legalot. We don't discuss Kabbalah. But so he knows, Godel Shabador, so he knows Sifrei Kabbalah. He doesn't normally paskin Kabbalistically, as far as we can tell, in the hundreds of Chuvas, assuming we have it right. But here he says, that's an opinion. Then he says, Shuv Matzosi B'Chuvas HaRashba. He goes to a very exoteric, clear Torah perspective without any Kabbalah whatsoever. So the question is, again, what is going on here? Just to show that this is not a, you know, unique formulation, the same thing happens in another tshuva, even a longer tshuva. Interesting shaila, which today we don't practice anymore, but mashenogu b'mitzas makomos b'eretz Yisrael, right? What about the priestly gifts? So it's of great interest to me. Zroa l'chayayim v'keva, right? That every time Yisrael or non-Kohen shechts flesh, shechts an animal, so the Kohen gets pieces, small pieces, right? Not such critical pieces. Right? Go to the Kohen. There were places in Eretz Yisrael that kept that up for a very long period of time. You have it in Ashkenaz much earlier, but here they're talking about it. And what they did was they didn't give the actual meat. They gave a little tzedakah. They gave the value, a small value, just to show that this should be a matnas kuna. The Kohanim should get it. So should we keep doing this? So here again, a very long tshuva that I've given you just an excerpt. But if you look in the excerpt that I gave you, Mutal Ayla Kayam Aminik, he says we can keep that custom going. And he brings support from that in the underlying, V'chein kosav chocham godul makubol. Right, again, a great Chacham, a Kabbalist, Shmo Rabbeinu Yaakov, same name, Shehaya Shoel She'elos Ben Shamayim, V'omru Shehu Rabbeinu Tam. Wow. And if I tell you a great Risho named Rabbi Yaakov, so if you want to make me feel happy, you'll say Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbi Yaakov, Ish Tam, Rashi's grandson. So not only is Radvaz comfortable with these Shitos, and he's identifying this Rabbi Yaakov as a godel B'chochma u'b'kabbalah. Again, he's living. Rabbeinu Tam dies in 1171, so this is 400 years later. But no, it's not in France. It's in Egypt or Eretz Yisrael, right? Ooh, they say he's Rabbeinu Tam. That would be fantastic, right? We didn't know that. It's not Rabbeinu Tam. I don't mean that badly, but we'll see. But in other words, this is what we call in French ois gehalten. In other words, the Radvaz holds from this big paisik. So that's our topic. That's our discussion. To what extent, now, you'll tell me, how do I know that Shailot ben HaShamayim are dreams or related to dreams? So we'll see shortly that it's very clear, once we see who this Rabbi Yaakov is, that the technique by which he asked questions to Shamayim, you know, how do you call up, operator, you know, I'd like Shamayim, you can't even get it on the internet. You know, what's the phone number for Shamayim? Maybe you can. I don't know. It doesn't work that way. So the answer is something called a Shailat Chalom. Again, people who are adepts in Kabbalah, in mysticism, and this goes back way, way before the medieval iteration of the Kabbalah. This goes back to something we call Heichalot literature, Sifrus Heichalos, right? Very important early texts associated with Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, certain Amoroi, Eretz Yisrael, question exactly when they were put together. Some people feel they were put together more towards the period of the Gaonim. But these are legitimate sources of esoteric knowledge of what we would call Jewish mysticism. They talk a lot about, or significantly about, Shelas Chalom, that the person who knows how to do this, don't ask me, the person who knows how to do this, They prepare themselves. They're metahir themselves. They fast. They wear Yom Kippur clothes. They wear lavonim. They go to sleep. And if the proper person does this, they get in their sleep. And we'll see through the Baal HaChalom, Ippus Malo, somebody comes and gives the answer, so that when the person awakens, they have the Himmel Dika Tshuva. Like, that's apparently what's going on here. I mean, you'll say to me, what are you talking about? Doesn't it say in the Torah, Lo Bashamayim Hi? And you'd be right. We just learned it not so many weeks ago, right? It's hard to remember with all the Yom Noroim, right? We just learned it. Lo Bashamayim Hi, Himmel Dika Tshuvas, you know, Eifam Utsim Itzeh Ve'erzeh. It's going to get worse before it gets better, but let's take a look. Okay, so, yes, sir. By the way, you're allowed to ask colleagues. Ask me questions at any point. I at the end too, but stop me. It's fine. You go ahead.
The second one looks like Caleb
Aleph. Yeah.
Caleb Aleph, he identifies with Yaakov as being Rabbein Tam. Caleb Aleph,
he doesn't. So the question is, in the hundreds of Tshuvas HaRadvaz, are they arranged in chronological order, topical order, some other order? And the answer again is yes. In other words, they're organized like all Tshuvas HaRishonim, except some. Read all of them and you'll know. So it might be significant, but in other words, I can't tell you for sure that this came first, this came second, right? It would be mistaber that he, you know, if he knew it's Rabbeinu Tam before, why didn't he say so later? So the answer is maybe he found out later. He's working on it. You know, he was also intrigued, right? And I'll show you. You won't leave here without knowing who this Rabbi Yaakov is, at least who I think this Rabbi Yaakov is. Okay. So before we proceed further, let me in fact state what I just did in more concrete halachic terms. If you went to the Rambam and you told the Rambam that you were asking questions from Min HaShamayim, the Rambam would tell you, probably, step into my other office, I'll treat you as a medical practitioner, and he knew something about psychiatry too. But anyway, I'll prove that to you, although some might argue. The Rambam in source number 3, talking about the prerogatives of the Novi in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, and as again, this is a very strange development, right? And what I'll show you tonight is that there's other evidence for it, and we'll have to try to understand, therefore, what in the world does it mean? The Rambam would not have been so happy, I don't think, if I can say that, and that's in Perek Tes, Halacha Dalid of Yesodei HaTorah in source number 3, where the Rambam is talking about the prerogatives of a Novi, what can a Novi do, and what a Novi may not do. In other words, there are things the Novi can overstep his bounds. And the unfortunate problem is if a Novi oversteps his bounds, he's not given a parking ticket, he's given a much more severe reprimand, as we'll see. All right, so look in Halacha Dalit. Prior to this, he's talking about Eliyahu, and he's talking about the whole problem. Can the Novi change the Halacha? And the answer essentially is that a Novi can make what's called a Horah Shah. The Navi can, in particular circumstances, and Eliyahu is the paradigm for that, change the halacha temporarily. And there are examples. But in Halacha Dalit, he says, V'cheinim okar dovim idvarim shlamadim pi hashmua. But if a Navi comes along and says, through my prophetic abilities, and he's a Navi MS till this point, my Navua tells me this halacha that's already been paskined X now has to change to Y permanently. Or the Navi says, listen, we have a Shaila here. Never mind the Bezdin, never mind the Rabbonim. I know through Nevuah the Halacha should be this way, and I'm telling you, Mikoach HaNevuah, through prophetic ability, the Halacha goes like this. So whether he wants to change the Halacha permanently, or whether he wants to paskin via Nevuah, the Rambam says, in a word, nothing doing. But he says it much more strongly. Harei zeh Navi Sheker. He's become a false Navi. That's an inappropriate use of Nevuah, v'yechonek. And he gets a big Misa, right? Again, the Navi can't afford to make those mistakes. Afal pi she'asa os, even if he demonstrates some type of other proof for his position. Sheharei bo l'hakchish Torah she'omra lo bashamayimi. You can't paskin shilas based on Nevuah. Period. You can't change the halacha permanently. Rambam reiterates, aval afi shoa shomim lo bakol. If a Navi has an emergency situation, that's what the Nevuah is. It's to give Am Yisrael guidance in a particular situation, then he can. So according to the Rambam, if a Navi can't paskin a halacha, it almost sounds like a Kal Vachomer that a Chalom can't paskin a halacha, although Yesh Mishacholik, as I'll tell you in a second. Yes. So one of the reasons I like questions during the talk is because it very often makes the talk shorter, which is good. This is going to be a very important issue. It still begs the question, but you hear what he's asking, right? In other words, the Radvaz didn't have a shaila where some wonderful balabasta came to him and said, Reb Radvaz, my spoon went here, went there, what's the halacha? And he said, oh, I have a chalom. No. There are major poskim on different sides here, but still the question, so how do you make the call based on a halom? So you're right. It's not, you know, dialing up a halom for some, basic original shaila. I don't mean unimportant shaila, but some original research. Here, he's got sides, and we're going to see that this is very typical moving forward. This will help the problem, but it certainly doesn't eliminate the problem. I thought you were going to say, listen, he had the chalom. He paskined. I'm just using it. You know, it's like you're not allowed to graft two species together, but if they make the tangerines, you can eat them, you know, the capon, whatever they are, right? So, you know, he had the chalom. I'm not having the chalom. I'm just using the results. That would be more difficult. No, but your point is well made, but again, still, you still seem to be paskin a shaila. Why do I care what happened in the chalom in a halacha context, right? Now, I should point out for correctness and for accuracy, the Chidah, one of the great achronim, Chidah, also Eretz Egypt and other places, they traveled a lot, great bibliographer amongst the Rishonim, wrote about 50 Svarim, unbelievable, died in 1806. The Chidah actually says that there may be a difference between nevuah and a dream, in the sense that the Navi, why is the Ram so upset with the Navi doing it? Because that's mamish, an abuse of the halachic process. You can't substitute nevuah for halacha, for hachro, for bezdin, for psak, whatever it may be. However, a chalom, the Baal HaChalom is not saying, I'm sure the halacha this way. That's what the chalom said. So the Chidah says maybe there's wiggle room here. It seems to me most Rishonim who are against this wouldn't agree, but that's a different problem, right? In other words, chalom is a lower case of nevuah, right? And again, these are all sort of heavenly phenomena, where heavenly phenomena are involved. A person is involved in some type of heavenly process, right? A dream also, right? Gemaras that say a dream, you know, can lead is on the continuum of nevuah. Of course, the Gemara says dream is also on the continuum of shtus. It depends who's having the dream too. We'll talk about that. But nonetheless, it seems to me if you ask the Rambam, can I rely on dreams for paskening halacha, the Rambam might not give such a person chenek, but he wouldn't be too pleased. He would be none too pleased. In fact, there's a Rashi in Shas that suggests that Rashi wouldn't be too pleased, right? So you don't have to be a rationalist of the Rambam's caliber to have some misgivings here. Interesting Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kufches in source number 4, the shaila is about writing tefillin. On what can you write tefillin? So we know you write tefillin on the skin of a kosher behema, right? So whichever behema produces, if it's a kosher animal, right, the skin of that animal is a possible candidate for tefillin writing. Good. So the shaila came up. What about, the Amoraim are discussing, Mahu, in the second line of the Gemara, you have the Amoraim mentioned, Lichtov tefillin gabe or shel dag tohor. What if you have a thick-skinned fish? You have a kosher fish, it's gezut in the skin, right? Can I write tefillin on the skin of a kosher fish? It's kosher, no doubt about that. So the Gemara says, so the Amora answers the first Amora, Amalei, it's Marbarei Duravina, Meir of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Kosher Amoroyim, Amalei, Im Yovo Eliyahu V'Yomar. Well, we'll have to dial up Eliyahu on this. And the Gemara discusses, Mayim Yovo Eliyahu V'Yomar, what does Eliyahu have to tell us? So the punchline of the Gemara is that the problem with the fish skin, what's the real problem? If it's a kosher animal, so what should be the problem? The problem with the fish is, you'll forgive me, it's a stinkt, zuama, right? It's not very, may not be very aromatic, right? It may be, in other words, the good news is it's a kosher animal. The bad news is, lo matim letfilin, it's not such a good idea. So we'll have to ask Eliyahu. We didn't know Eliyahu was an ichthyologist, but apparently he knows everything. He's going to tell us about fish skin. If you look at the Rashi, you see that Rashi interprets the Gemara Shaila in such a way that he too would ostensibly be against using dreams to paskin or other heavenly phenomena interactions. You know, Gilui Eliyahu. Look at Rashi in line 2, right? My im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar hetav v'iser ain toli bo delo b'shamayim hi. Right? Rashi says what's bothering the Gemara is how in the world can you call Eliyahu? Eliyahu was floating around in the Himmel. He's, you know, arts nothing but him. He's not here anymore. So even if he would give you an answer, it's a lo b'shamayim problem. Right? It's a problem of not paskening based on shamayim, yeah? Well, so the question is, the teku is you're right. So is it tishbi yitar? It's kushos vabayis, or is teku just an Aramaic word of saying we don't know the answer? But either way, right? Right. So again, no. But if Eliyahu comes back, to the world, he can be reinstated as the posek hador. Right. That's, you know, he's not flying around anymore. He's, you know, he's on the ground. But so I don't think Rashi would be too happy, right? If you say to Rashi, I got an answer in a chalom, Rashi would tell you. Ksiv lo bashamayim he, right? You know, of course, the Ramban on in Parshas Nitzavim points out that machlokes had to learn ki amitzvah hazos, right? What mitzvah is lo niflesi? What mitzvah is lo bashamayim? So Rashi there, consistently in the Rambam, Mishnah Torah, learns it's going on Torah. The Ramban learns it's going on tshuva. I don't know that he disagree here, but it's a different discussion. It's a different lecture, different shiur. Not for now. Okay, that's from past stuff. So. Yeah, but that's, we will listen, but again, we'll listen to him. Oh, very good. But what will we listen to him about? Whether Zuhamor, whether the fish stink. In other words, from Shamayim, what can you get? You can get Metzius, you can get Yeda. You can't get the Maisa Psak. You could get information. If you're lucky enough to have Eliyahu show up and give you information, grab it. Right? I might even say it in more technical terms. You can get a birur from Shamayim. They can point you in the right direction. But the call has to be made by the posek. Right? So that's what we're getting from. Very good. And that's what Rashi's saying. He said, it's the Gemara. So again, my sense is if you asked Rashi, somebody had a chalom and got the answer, Rashi would say, maybe, could you verify it, you know, in the lab? Could you do it the right way? Not so clear. Now, so the Rambam, I don't think, would be too keen on this. This Rashi and this Sugi doesn't seem to be too keen on this, but the Radvaz is doing it. One more. Number five is a mouthful. Number five, this is called the Yeshivish way of doing business. In order to give you the Ramban and the Ravid, I give you the Kapos tomorrow with the Ibn Lev. You know, this is like, if you ask Yeshiva Bacher, where does he know a Pasuk from, I'll quote you Gemara. And if you ask him where he knows a Gemara from, I'll quote you Ketzos. So this is that type of approach. Nice Yeshiva Bacher, right? We need a Rambam and a Ravid and a Ramban, so I'm going to give it to you from the Kapos tomorrow in the Maharam Ibn Chaviv, who's in the 17th century, and the Ibn Lev, who's from the 16th century. What's the discussion? Famously, as I'm sure some of you know, there's a very juicy Ravid on this topic. Not about dreams, but again, about another heavenly phenomenon that's worth pursuing, right? And that's Takasukas Inyan. Machlokas Rambam Ravid Hadas Sheniktam Rosho. You had a beautiful hadasim, and somebody chopped the head off, right? You know, it's all mishulish, and somebody chopped off the head. So this is not the full shaila, but the shaila is, right, what happens if an esrog got its head chopped off, called a pitum? Certainly, beginning, right, possible, depending on how it came off, even the other days, yomtiv, and so on and so forth. In fact, even the ukats, right, if the top or the bottom of the esrog gets chopped off, right, big problems, even when we might allow some type of chaser, not there. Lulav also, lulav sheniktam rosho, possible, right? We're always worried about the rosh. That's why all the problems of lulav always in the head end. You know, that's the problem. Aravis, we don't worry about the head end because there is no head end. Anyway, the top and the bottom look the same pretty much. But hadas, it's got a head end. You could see the top go look tomorrow. You could see the top of the hadas. There's a top end. There's no bottom end. I mean, it's the other end. Okay. So what happens if the hadas got its head chopped off? Is it a psul in that min? So the Rambam paskins, no. Again, there's much more to it than this, right? For esrog and for lulav, for the two main minim, you know, there we need more requirements. We get down to the hadasim, we're a little bit more lenient. It's not that simple, but that's not a bare way to say it. The Ravid in Mishnah Torah, the Ravid in Hilchas Lulav says, possible. What's the issue? So forget all my interesting explanations, which may or may not be fully correct. It's a machlokas tanoim. There are two machlokas tanoim, two shitas in tanoim, very close to each other in Masechah Sukkah, and it's a whale of a shaila to figure out which tana to paskin like. So the Rambam paskins like the shitas tanoim lahakel, and the Ravid is paskin like the shitas lachumra. But you know what the Ravid says? When you ask the Ravid, how do you know to paskin lachumra here? What does he say in his Hagoah in Mishnah Torah? Far hofia ruach hakodesh beveis midrashenu. We knew how to pask in this very difficult machlokas tanaim. Why? Because the Ruach HaKodesh came into the Beis Medrash and gave us the answer. Again, it's not a chalom, but it's this sort of heavenly phenomenon. It's a lo b'shamayim hi, right? Paskening through Ruach HaKodesh doesn't seem to be much different than paskening through some type of shaylas chalom, and yet the Ravid lists it. And he says further, and in my chibur, he says, I give you all the data. That's my paraphrase, modern day paraphrase. What chibur is he talking about? So we talk, I have a kuntras on Inyone Lula from the Ravid, and it's put together in a number of places. And the Ravid there, without mentioning any of this mystical stuff, goes through the numbers and shows why he thinks the halacha is l'chumra. But in his Mishneh Torah, he says straight out, that's a famous thing, straight out, Kfar Hofia Ruach HaKodesh B'Beis Midrashay. Now, why am I telling you about the Ramban too? So you'll see that. I'm going to put it all together for you in a second. The Ramban, you would say, so apparently the Ravid held from such zachin. Now you'll tell me it's a very tough case. It's like what you said. It's two tanoim. How are you machria between two tanoim? You need taka, Ruach HaKodesh. We need to go apply to, you know, go to the higher authority, right? It's a, you know, very, tense situation. The Ravid goes through it in straight learning. The Ramban, who's a very big makubal, as we know, dafka is cholek mikol vakol with the Ravid, and he doesn't even lo mityaches l'ruach hakodesh. He doesn't care. There was ruach hakodesh there. The Ravid in his hasagas to the Ramban, in his critique of the Ravid, which we have word for word, he just disagrees. So again, if the dust settles, and I'll add on another layer, if we let the dust settle here, turns out that not only is Rashi not so thrilled with this approach based on the Gemara and Shabbos, the Rambam characteristically wouldn't be so thrilled, even though, again, the heavenly phenomena are a little different in each case, but I don't know that that makes a difference here. But even the Ramban, whose Kabbalistic credentials are ad hashamayim, right? Radvaz talked about this being a gadol in Kabbalah. The Ramban was a gadol in Kabbalah. Read his Perush HaChumash, every three words is Derech HaEmes, Derech HaKa, and so on and so forth. The Ramban is against it, this type of approach. The Haraya, he goes bullets against the Ravid, and he doesn't even relate to the Ruach HaKodesh part. Don't tell me that. Tell me learning. Right? Tell me learning. In fact, I'll ask you the question in a moment. It's a fun facts question, so to speak, of learning. Right? The Ramban in Chumash, in his Perush al HaTorah, mentions Derech HaEmes, he does it very smartly. If you're not such an adept of Kabbalah, what will you do? When he starts talking Derech HaEmes, you go, the Ramban is over my head again. I'll skip to the Pshat. Right? So he even figured out a way to keep the people who weren't ready out of it. So don't feel bad. Everybody gets, you know, you got to know Sfirot. You got to know all kinds of Kabbalistic stuff to figure it out. And even then you're going very often, which way did it go? Right? But Ramban in his Perush on Chumash mentions Kabbalistic notions and issues how often? Every three psukim, maybe even less, you know, more than that. In his Perush on Shas, big Perush the Ramban on Shas, think about this for a second. How often does the Ramban talk about mystical issues? Nothing near what he does in Chumash, and we'll talk about that. I'll come back to that in a second. Let that cook for a second. So the Ramban is not in favor of this. Now, where the Ibn Chaviv, where the Maram, where the Achronim come in is, it's a machlokes Achronim, sort of, whether what the Ravid was saying was real mysticism, or is it just an expression? When the Ravid says, Kfar Hofia Ruach HaKodesh B'Veis Midrashenu, is he saying, Mamish, I saw the Ruach HaKodesh. Listen, Kedai who arrived at Lismaholov. Or is he saying what? We've been learning, and there's a kind of a certitude. You know, we felt a certain certitude. We felt that HaKodesh Baruch Hu had Siyat HaDishmai. By the way, and here these are not any academics. Professor Tursky, all of our shalom, Professor Tursky, who is your tzaddik right around this time, Zeich Tzaddik Livracha, argued that the Ravid was not saying mystically this is the halacha. He was saying, Ravid was a big tzaddik, and he was saying, in a big London, he was saying, I worked it out. It's as if the Shechina came and said, Gerecht. You know, you got a haskama from the Shechina. Doesn't mean it's a mystical psak. The scholars argue about it. The Achronim argue about it. What does the Ravid mean? There is, by the way, another case in the Ravid where he says something similar. Anybody remember? It's a famous Ravid. This is the Ravid that has to do with the status of Eretz Yisrael today, the Harabayist in Hilch Shemit of Yovel Perek Vav, right? What does he say there? Loch Yidal, what does he say there? He doesn't say Ruach HaKodesh. He says, I'm paskening this way because I came to the Shita, so it Hashem li Yireyov. It's a pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shares his secrets with those who fear him. Again, wow. So it's a second Ravid. But here too, how do you learn that? So Hashem li Yireyov, not esoteric teachings. God reveals the depths of the Torah to those who fear him. Right? If you look, his introduction to his Perush to Adius, one of the few Perushim that we have, he wrote Perushim to Noshim Nezik in Moed, probably other places too. We don't have most of them. They were lost. Chaval Davdin, really Chaval Davdin. Right? Adius is one of the Masechets we have. In the beginning of Adius, he says, also, you're going to see Perushim here that nobody else said, Savar Hashem Li Yireyov. So people, oh, mysticism. No, he says, I didn't have a Rebbe for this Adius. Who learns Adius? So Sodei Shem Rebbe, I had to figure it out. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me Siyat Dishmaya because those who fear him, those who worship him properly, will have an advantage in learning too if they work hard. So again, exactly what does the Ravid mean? Mitzad Sheini. The Ravid didn't write anything Kabbalistic of which we are aware himself. But, big but here, who is the Ravid's son? Someone named Rabbi Yitzchak Saginoh, Rabbi Isaac the Blind, who was Migodol Gidole HaMekubolim in southern France in the 13th century. He wrote to the Ramban, he wrote to Mekubalei Gerona. Doesn't mean if the son's a big Mekubal, the father was too, but where there's fire, there's smoke. You know, in other words, he didn't come from nowhere either. And within Mesoros of the Yitzchak Saginoh and other members of the family, the Ravid is also quoted as knowing these things. So at the end of the second inning, and we're not talking about the real scores because it could make a person sick if they're a Yankee fan. But anyway, never mind that. From the beam, I got to be careful here. Let's just get nishgut. But anyway, if you're a Met fan, you're in. Okay, this is my Dean Berger of Revel. We've been fighting about this for 35 years already. More than that. He's a Faleslecha Mets fan. I'm a big Yankee fan. We fight at doctoral exams about this. It's not good. Anyway, but so we're not doing that now. But at the end of the second inning, it's on tape. At the end of the second inning, the score is Radvaz, yes, but again, he's in his own category. Gedolei HaRishonim, no, in terms of using these kinds of heavenly phenomena, except for not the Rashi, not the Rambam, you know, not the Rashi who is equal opportunity Gadol, not the Rambam who's rationalistic, not the Ramban who's Kabbalistic, right? And the Ravid, maybe. It's an important maybe. We'll see. Ravid, maybe. Okay, now I'm ready to tell you, who is this Rabbi Yaakov? What is the Radvaz talking about? The Radvaz clearly had a source, and the source that he had, you could go, you probably can't buy it now because it always sells out very quickly, but I'll tell you about it. So next time you can see it, it's very cheap. It's a little thin book. You could buy it if you'd like it immediately. And that's in source number 6. Oh, before I do source number 6, let me do number 7, because that's the answer to the riddle. How much mysticism does the Ramban have in his Talmudic commentaries? Right? In his biblical commentary, Unashir. And again, the Ramban is the one who seems not like the Ravid to not be so supportive of all of this, right? In this context. Even though he seems to know the material, he's not supportive. So I once went to another great choker who was all, Yortzeit is also around now, is the left of Sukkot, Professor Yisrael Tashma, that was his name, Olav HaSholem, in Yerushalayim. And I prepared this for a long time. I said to him, he learned in Chevron, he was the Mazkir Tzva'i of Rav Gorin in the army. His job was to sit and talk and learning all day with Rav Gorin. So he knew everything and he knew everything. So they had very nice chats. They did what they had to do. It worked out pretty well. Anyway, he went on to a very illustrious career, knows new Rishon backwards, forwards, upside and downside. So I came to him one day. I got off the plane. I came to him in Yerushalayim. I said, oh, how many times does the Ramban mention Kabbalistic material in his parish on Shas? And I had been working on this a long time. And being a good Jewish person, I answered my question with another, I answered my own question. I said, 10. He said to me, pachot, fewer. I said, 5. He said to me, pachot. I said, I have 3. He says, there's a 4th. There's a Ramban and a Milchamas. I felt good that one of the 4 in the Shas is here in number 7. The Gemara in Bava Basra says, a beautiful Gemara, interesting Gemara, Miyom Shachar of Beis Hamikdash, Api Shenitla, the woman, and Vim, Minachachom Elo Nitla. It was following the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, which concomitantly caused the loss of Nevuah, right? The end of the Nevim, Chag HaZachariah Malachi, you get the Beis Hamikdash, right? By the end of Bayashani, there is no more Nevuah for sure, right? Even earlier than that. The Nevuah was given over, some aspects were given over to the Chachamim. And if you look at the Ramban, it's a very nice comment. Again, these are yours to keep. Please take a look. the Ramban talks about the fact that when a Chacham learns properly, again, there is some kind of a impulse of certitude. You know, he knows there's a what do you call it? The Noda Yehuda story like this that tells it very graphically. They sent him a fake Shiloh once to try to fool him, and he figured it out because he says, when I go to a Paskin of Shiloh, I get a certain Hargosha that the MS is coming along, and here I'm getting no Hargosha. It means there's no Shiloh. And as they basically stuck pins into a chicken to try to create trephas that are impossible to happen. You know, so he said it's a fake Shiloh. Anyway, the Ramban doesn't work that sort of that superficially, but or that way. The Ramban, again, talks about the nexus between Chochmah and Nevuah. That's one place. The other place that I found is the Shvuas Chavtes. The Mishnah talks about Iyum, that you have to scare the daylights properly out of Edom. You have to make sure they're telling the truth. Before Edom come, we read them the truth act. You got to make sure, you know, if you're coming to testify in Besdin against somebody, you better be telling the truth, or this and this may occur and so on. It's all kinds of psukim. The Ramban says also it's a kind of a mystical test. You know, it's in other words, because we want to make sure they're telling the truth. Also, the Gemara Yavamas Memtes is Baklari Shein Amir Shemeira about different types of Nevuah, and Professor Tashmei the Rabban the Melchomis in Perek Tes of Brachos, which talks about dreams in Shas, right? Perek Tes of Brachos. If you want to know Chazal's dream Torah, right? There's a Melchomis there where the Ramban also seems to be injecting a notion of mysticism. So four, and the Ramban's parish on Shas is pretty long, right? These are the kind of gedolim he once had. What took me, you know, months and months to figure out, working day and night, he had, you know, like that. Four out of a million, that's not a very big percentage. You know, four out of how many Dibur HaMaschils? I don't know, thousands, tens of, who knows? And so what does that tell you? What that tells you is, on Istaris LaShem Elokeinu, when you're doing Nigla, when you're doing Torah, when you're doing Gemara, when you're doing Halacha, the Ramban, the great Mekubal, says, put your halacha hat on, put your memtes ponim shel Torah, you know, shivim ponim la Torah, put your halacha hat on, put your Kabbalah hat a little to the side, which would fit into his not approving method here of the Ravid. So again, just an aside, but an important aside. So the question is, what's with this Ravid? What's with this Radvaz? So let me introduce you to who the Rabbi Yaakov is. Now we'll get somewhere here. In source number six, we know exactly who this Rabbi Yaakov is. There was a Chacham named Rabbi Yaakov. Interesting question, was he Ben Levi or was he a Levi based on the manuscripts? The answer is yes, we're not sure. Of Marvej. Marvej is a small town in northern France, but it seems he did not function in northern France, Rabbi Yaakov Mimarvej, but rather in southern France. And he quotes, the only Chachamim who he quotes by name in his Sefer are Chachmei Provence, Chachmei Narbona, Chachamim of Narbonne, Chachamim of Lunel. He doesn't quote any names, really. He quotes other names, but the only current Chachamim he quotes are ones from Provence. So it seems he functioned in southern France. Why is that significant? Because where did the Ravid live? Southern France, Ravid of Poschiere. So it seems there was something in the water in southern France which caused Gedolim there to perhaps be more sympathetic to this approach in terms of Torah. Now, what is this Shutman HaShamayim? That's quite a name. And this is a Xerox from the Sefer. Moshe Rav Kook published it in 957 originally with a fantastic introduction by a very great Baki, Reuven, a big Talmud Chacham, Reuven Margoliath Zal. They've reprinted it many times. I think I bought it probably around 1970. Maybe it cost $12. Today, I'm sure they're charging something more. But it's not a big Sefer. It's a little Sefer. When it comes out, grab it. You know, that there are two things to grab. There's a little pamphlet called Chasonos HaShas, where they have a lot of the censored portions. Also cost $4. They print like 1,000 or 2,000. It goes out 3 weeks later, and you know, then people can't get it. Oh, that you can maybe Xerox if you, I don't know. This is also the same thing. If it comes out, the introduction by Reuven Margoliath is worth the whole cost. He takes up many of the issues that we're taking up. I'd go a little differently, but it's great material. It's great information, great material. So what I printed for you here are two of the questions. There are about 70 questions that Rabbi Yaakov of Marvej asked from the heavens, from the Shamayim. It wasn't Leil Hoshana Rabbah, but he asked it from the heavens, right? In Kisveya, there are still a few more. These things pop up. It was apparently very popular. In some manuscripts, by the way, he's called Rabbi Yaakov of Vivier. Vivier is talking southern France. So, Echshehu, again, we at least have a geographic commonality. Now, watch this, folks. This is going to knock your socks off. Anybody ever see the Sefer? It's a fantastic little Sefer, right? So here are questions 2 and 3. And forgive me, ladies, these are tefillin questions. A, they're at the beginning, but number 3 is a very important technique question. And number 2 will set the stage for us. V'od sha'alti. So this is how Rabbi Yaakov posed questions to Shamayim. Don't try this at home, but here's how he did it. Va'od sha'alti, al birkas tefillin, regarding the brachos of tefillin, im halacha kedivrei ha'gaon Rabbi Yitzchak al-Fasi, is the halacha like the great Gaon, the Rif, one of our great early Rishonim, she'im lo soch bein tefillah tefillah einu mevarech al haniach tefillin kishminech al yad. Tefillin is a very interesting mitzvah. It's a compound mitzvah, maybe. There's two parts. There's the shel yad and there's the shel rosh. Right? There's the arm piece and the head piece. Do I make a bracha on each one? Do I want to make a one bracha on the whole thing? Big machlokes. So the Rif Shita was what? If I don't interrupt, if I don't talk, one bracha will cover the two parts. It's a compound mitzvah. One bracha will cover both layings of the tefillin, both the shel yad and the shel rosh. So do we paskin that way? Most people sitting here, if they're Ashkenazim, is that what we do? No, we taka make two brachas, right? It's hard to do different things, but, right? Divrei Ritz al-Fasi, shim lo soch bein tefila tefila, einu mevarech al yach tefilin kshmei achayat. Ubanicho shal rosh, einu mevarech klal. According to the Rif, you don't make a second bracha at all, unless you talk in the middle, and that will then set off a second bracha. Oh, halachik, divrei ha-geonim, several geonim, who lived earlier than the Rif, but again, there's a nexus, there's a commonality there in terms of their traditions, who held, Sha'afil lo sach tzarech levarach al shal rosh al mitzvah tefillin, vim sach mevarach al shal rosh shtayim. Right? In other words, if you don't talk, you still got to make two brachas, and if you do talk, make two brachas at the end. Now, interestingly, by the way, the fact that he's quoting the Rif and the Geonim here might suggest, right, that he's again in a more Sephardic or Provençal milieu, but we'll see, he does quote other people, right? So there's a big machlokas here. That's the question he asked. The Heshivu, now watch the answer. This is on technique. Again, they answered, as the Radvazit, who's the they, right? Who's up there? What is it, the Secretariat of Answering, you know, in other words, right? We'll see. Lo, watch this, folks. Lo bisave tame. The lo bedardike etza. This is like a little Aramaic code. What is this? What do the words mean? It's based on a Gemara. Lo besave tame. The zeta doesn't have it right. The lo bedardike etza. Neither do the einiklach have it right. Right. Neither do the yinglach have it right. So the zeta doesn't have it right. The ingle doesn't have it right. Skip the generation. What does this mean in English? He tells you in Hebrew. Ki Avraham lo yadanu, the Yisrael lo yakirenu. Again, based on a pasuk, right? In other words, nisht Avraham and nisht Yaakov. Not the Zeta, not the Einikel. Elo what? The Esbrisi akim es Yitzchok. Another pasuk. Rather, who's right here? The man in the middle. The son of Avraham, good. And the father of Yisrael, Yaakov. Who's that? Yitzchak. So who's right? Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak. What a way to say Yitzchak is right. Couldn't you have said, you know? So what's the answer? This is not just because Epps and Himmel, well, it is because they know Tanakh, but that's part of what you see. According to, throughout the Tshuva's Min HaShemayim, what language they speak in Himmel when they give you the Tshuva? They speak what I call Pasuk talk, Pasuk speak. What would you expect them to speak in heaven? Psukim, they don't speak like this. They speak Hoich. They speak Hebrew. They speak Psukim. Right? Echod kirosiv ubichori et neyu vavarcheyu gam baruch yiyeh. Right? Now, it's the Rif, the Rif, the Rif. Wow. Wow. So by the way, now comes again your very good point from the beginning. What kind of a shaila is this? This is not a tepel lefel shaila. This is not a very important hilchos nidah shaila that just came in. The rabbanim are going to look at every shaila kid. No. This is an entrenched machlokes. And it features all stars. It's the Rif against the Geonim. So apparently, Yaakov Marvej says, "Ey Bazoi, how do I call this thing? I can't flip a coin. I have to frag him from the Malach. I have to ask the heavens." Apparently, still very unusual, but that's apparently what he's doing. But there's more. What do you say? Yeah, except it backfired. Right? In other words, right. In other words, you're right. In other words, what he's referring to, of course, is Bamitsiyah Nun Testament Beis, right? That the machlokes between Rebbe Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and the Chachomim, and the Chachomim, the majority ruled one way. Rebbe Eliezer, though, had a very impressive gallery of evidence, right? He had shaking trees and moving houses. In other words, the Shamayim was creating hurricanes, so to speak, in order to show he was right. And in the end, he was not right. Right? So that it just begs the question. So what does Rabbi Yaakov Avinash think he's doing here? Oh, let's try to solve it a little bit more now, and then we'll go make it more complicated and solve it. Look at Shaila Gimel. Shaila Gimel is great because, A, it's just, if you like Bayes, you're going to love Gimel. But, B, more importantly, it gives it a little bit of the technique. Another tefillin Shaila. V'od sha'alti al seder parashia shebet tefillin. The order of the parashias. Now, again, gentlemen are a little more familiar probably. In the Shel Yad and Shel Rosh, we have four parashios of tefillin that talk about tefillin in the Torah. Two in Sefer Shmos, right, very near each other. One in Parshas Va'eschanan, in Shema, right? And one in V'hayoyim Shamoa. So in Parshas, two in Shmos, Va'eschanan in Dvarim, Akev, right? And that's the order in which they appear. They go in order. Except, that's according to whom? That's according to Sheetz Rashi. Right? Now we keep saying ain muktam mucha about Torah. Normally speaking, the Torah goes in order. It's only when it can't go in order that it changes. So you go in order. You list the parshias in order of how they go. So if you would open up the Shel Rosh, for example, and the little striations and the little compartments, you'll see exactly that order. Shmos 1, Shmos 2, Dvarim 1, Vaeschanan, Dvarim 2, Akev. Right? Questions, do you start from the right or the left? Further on machlokas from many possibilities, but that's the order. Oh. Rabbeinu Tam, however, Rashi's own grandson, held that what? There's a little switch. Namely, it's not parshios 1, 2, 3, 4, according to the order of the Torah. It's actually 1, 2, 4, 3. You flip the two in Dvarim. V'hoyoim Shamoa comes in slot 3, and V'yahavta only comes in slot 4. Why? What's the reason Rabbeinu Tam gives? What's called Havayos Ba'emtza. Nothing to do with Hawaii. Havayos ba'emtza, right? It says v'hoya ki v'yacho in one of the parashas, and v'hoya im shamoa tishmu in dvarim. V'hoya are the osios of, right, Shem Hashem, more or less, right? And therefore, we want to put those two shemos next to each other. Now you realize, if you wear Rashi's tefillin, what have you done according to Rabbeinu Tam? I don't want to say zero, but it's not much more than zero because your parashios are out of order. And vice versa, if you wear the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, not good according to Rashi. This was such an intractable problem. First of all, Rabbeinu Tam's own students wore two pairs of tefillin. And today, Chassidim v'Anshei Maisa, many people may hear, may wear two pairs of tefillin, but now you see what the big deal is, that the Rashi tefillin, the Rabbeinu Tam, people are schlepping. Can you imagine it on a plane, you have to put on Rashi tefillin and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? People do it. It's amazing. Right? It's amazing. They do it, yeah. Question, how do you do, we paskin like Rashi, basically, the Rambam paskins that way, others paskin that way, great Rishon, but because there's such a mutually exclusive situation here, we try, but, so Rabbi Yaakov Avinash wants to know, come on, this has to go, la shamayim, we can't get out of this, you know, miyachria, and by the way, a little secret, the machlokas Rashi and his enikal Rabbeinu Tam, was the same, you know, what was going on at that dinner table in that family, although the truth is Rabbeinu Tam died when he was 5 years old and Rashi died, so it's not clear they even had the discussion. But in any case, that same discussion happened prior in Ashkenaz. It's an old machlokas. But we have no solution. So he tries to solve that one. V'od sha'alti al seder parashia shebet tefillin. Oh, I asked that question, which order is right? Watch this, folks. V'kach ha'isah she'elasi. This is the script of how he asked, and that's how we know we're dealing with what's called a Sheilas Chalom. He said the following formula: Ona Hamelech Hagadol Hagibor Hanora Chacham Harazim, Megad. Right, the great king and warrior and Nora, awesome, the smartest, who reveals secrets and Nistaros and so on. Magid Nelomo Shomer Habris VaChesed. Who's that? Who's he talking to? Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Right? When you ask a question for Shemayim, you don't ask the committee, you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I ask you the following. Hagdel no chazdecho imonu hayom, taka yidu chesed, so please do us a big chesed, v'tzavei l'malachecha hakedoshim lahodieni, and please tell the holy angels to give me the answer. Right? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to you, you're either Moshe Rabbeinu or you've got a problem. So therefore, send me the answer with the malachim. I'm asking you, Ich bet Eich, I'm asking you, you're in charge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could you send the answer with the Malachim? That's why the answers are always what? Veheshivu. And they answered. Who is the they? Taka, the Malachim committee, so to speak. You have to be careful here, right? So the question goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if it's coming back, it's coming back with the Malachim. Tzaveilam alachacha hakadoshim v'adiyinis asher nistapaknu b'seder parashat shetfilin ki yesh me'achachamim omer havayis be'emtza v'im hechlif psulos. He says there's a one opinion, it is the more minority opinion, if you will, the Rabbeinu Tam, that you have to change 3 and 4, and according to that, you won't be yotzei. So could you please help us out over here? Again, this is as intractable, as long-term, as unresolvable a machlokas as there could be in halacha. Now, here's the best part. But by the way, this formula is a Sheilas Halom formula. You go to the Heichalot literature, you'll find this type of formula there. So this is not a technique that he made up or that he got Baruch HaKodesh. No, this has a certain imprimatur of Chachmei Hasod. So he wasn't going out on a limb here in that respect, but it's still very unusual. Now comes my favorite part, though, the answer. Ve'yishivu. What did the Malachim answer? Wait, you know, drum roll, please. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. They're both right. They didn't want to handle it in Shemayim either. But why? This is very cute. Ukimachlokes lamata, kach machlokes lamala. You know, the same way the Chachomim down there on earth are having this big machlokes, Rashi with Rabbeinu Tam, grace the Chachomim, they have the same machlokes in Shemayim. Why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu omer havayos ba'emtza. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would like, let's understand this right, we just davened it by Mincha. What's in the tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ato Echa v'shimcha Echa, there's the whole list in the Gemara and Brachas there, but one of the key parashas there is, Ato Echa v'shimcha Echa, umikam chay so goy echad ba'aretz. And his tefillin, kavayochel, according to the Gemara and Brachas, Navav, and many different perushim, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu stress? B'nei Yisrael are great. So he wants to have a shidduch. I think you're great, you think I'm great. In other words, it's there's hadadiyut here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to have this order of the tefillin. Oh, v'chol pamalya shalmala, but the rest of the heavenly entourage, the rest of the malachim, omrim havayos kisidron. They don't want to switch the parshas. They want them like the order of the Torah, like Rashi has it. Why? What do you gain by putting v'yahavta first before v'ayim shamala? What's v'yahavta symbolizing? Kabbalas ol malchus shamayim. The Malachim say, no, our job is to worship you, so we want to show we're worshiping you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I want to show you we're the same, you know, we're having a certain commonality, and the Malachim, no, we want to pay tribute to you first. So they're arguing about it. V'hu asher diber Hashem b'kravaya kodesh v'apnei kol ha'am ekaved v'zehu kvodu v'yos parshas malchus shamayim t'chila. So Take, so why do we paskin mostly like Rashi? Because our job is to be Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu first, and then we'll get in the other parasha. But fascinating, fascinating. Again, what this exactly means, I have no idea. But as I state, and we know though that this means what? Sheilas Chalom. Sheilas Chalom. Now, the problem with Rabbi Yaakov of Marvej, let me make one more sentence, I'll take it. This is the only thing he wrote. And again, we have 68 of these, 72 of these. We don't have from him a parish on Shas. We don't have from him there's no other evidence of Mihu Echo. However, as I'll show you in a second, first I'm going to take Rabbi Perel's question. But let me just say, so now the question is, but who apparently held from this Shutan HaShamayim Sefer pretty well? Our old friend from the beginning of the year, many moons ago, Radvaz. I'll show you who else held from him, and you'll be interested also to see. This Shutman HaShamayim, we know it was composed, the Raivad died in 1198 in the Minyonim. We know that this was composed in the first decade of the 13th century. So again, both in Provence. So again, the water in Provence is very interesting. Here, the Balei Sod apparently were doing this kind of thing. And already before the middle of the 13th century, we're going to see the Shutman HaShamayim being quoted by an A1 posek, not just in the 16th century, the Radvaz, maybe he's looking, he's struggling. Somebody's going to quote Shutman HaShamayim very authoritatively, very quickly after it's written, an A1 posek who doesn't need my haskamas, I'll show you in a second. That's going to be on side two. First, your question, please.
That was actually my question.
Yeah. Well, okay, but that's the other way around. The Besamim Rosh, it took him a while to figure out what it is, who it is, right? Rabbi Akiva Eger is quoting it in Kuvov, Kuv Zayin in Orachayim, but they didn't know exactly what it was. Here are people in his day who are quoting. Flip over to side two, I'll be happy to answer your question very graphically. The Shibole Haleket in source number 8 is an Italian Rishon. His name is Rabbi Tzidkia ben Avram Harofei, Min Ha'anavim with a Vov. They call that the Anau family, but since he's Italian, I say maybe the name was Modesto. But in any case, right, there's the modest person. But in any case, the Shibole Haleket, Within 50 years less, and Shibbol HaLeket is an A1, the Beis Yosef quotes Shibbol HaLeket, oh, and he has early Masoros from Ashkenaz, and he has all kinds of stuff that nobody else has. It's a Likud, it's a Leket, very good. So the Shibbol HaLeket quotes it, eight times. Now here are the stats. I didn't give you all eight, I gave you just a representative, but let me tell you the stats. Of the eight times that he quotes the Shulchan HaShemayim, he paskins like what the Shulchan HaShemayim concludes six of the times. In one case, which I'll show you, he respectfully disagrees, but that's because his Rebbe, his own Rebbe, held differently. So he says, great stuff, but my Rebbe held Andersh. In one case alone, he says, Divrei Chalomos Lomaila, why do we need Chalomos for? Bug me off. But it's a pretty high percentage. Now I'll tell you, even though it's on tape, I can get a little trouble. We learned something here from Rav Avadya Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Avadya Yosef, I noticed many years ago, Rav Avadya Yosef quotes, he quotes Shulchan HaShemayim, but he always tells you the Shibbol HaLeket said, Ein Mashgichim. He always quotes the negative one. Or in one or two, and I went to the Bar, I don't know Rav Avadya Yosef chose, okay, I have to be a bucky to know the truth. I went to the Bar Ilan, I'll use Bar Ilan for after the fact, you can use it to see. The only other one that he quotes is the one where he disagrees with, and he quotes like his Rebbe. But wait, there are another six cases where he agrees with him as he was 100%. So what happens? So the answer is, as Rabbi Avadya Zatzal said openly, the job of a posek is to steer the halachic ship. So Rabbi Avadya Yosef gives you the kitchen sink, as only he knows it, except if he leaves things out of the kitchen sink, you won't know that either, because he's the only one who knows what's in the kitchen sink. And he directly steers you in this direction. Why? Because Rabbi Avadya had as a very interesting aim, and Benny Lau wrote a dissertation on his use of Kabbalistic material, plays it all down, because amongst the Sephardim, a lot of them, you know, I would say if it was a Purim, the Babas and the Papas, you know, the Babas and the Sal, you know, they were paskin based on Kabbalah. Luckily that went through. Based on Kabbalah. And Rav Avadya wants to have Hilchese, Psuka, Sfaradit, Nigle. So also here too, he tells you, when it comes to Shulchan HaShemayim, I quote it for you, ignore it. But that's the 20th century, right? Here the Shibbol HaLeket doesn't ignore it at all. So I gave you a couple of examples. The first take here is actually in Yonah Diyoma. Can you count a cotton for a minion? Is the tenth in a minion? Which Rabbeinu Tam dealt with the problem. You didn't have such big shuls, right? Rav Shechter mentioned when he was here about the size of the shuls. You have little places, right? Sometimes you have vinkelach. They need a cotton for a minion. So he quotes here in the first source that I give you in Siman Tes, right away in the beginning. Ubishelas chalom, it's 4 lines to the bottom, Sheshol Hatzadik Rabbi Yaakov Mimarvesh. That's high praise. Matzosi, Sheilosi, Bemakum Shein Asara, and Rabbi Yaakov Marvesh, when he asked the question, got back the answer in Pasuk speak. They told him from Himmel or Pasuk. What Pasuk did they tell him? I underlined it. Veheshivulo, a line from Hallel that we've been saying, hopefully very carefully. Haktani Mim Hagdolim Yosef Shevelechem. If you have Gedolim and a cotton, Zog Kedusha, go for it. Hashem is with you. So here he says, V'hanira be'enai she'en cotton olel minyan asara, chen kaza Rabbeinu Yeshaya. Rabbeinu Yeshaya was his Rebbe, Rabbi Yeshaya Detrani, who we'll come back to in a moment. An earlier Italian Chacham, he was only his Rebbe based on the Ksav. He didn't learn with him face to face, but that was his Rebbe. So he calls about Tzadik, it's a great Shita. My Rebbe paskin differently. Right? That's example number 7. In the next two, you have cases where he agrees with him completely, right? Matzasi Sheilas Chalom Yaakov Marvej, and he paskins exactly like that Shita, and the same thing happens also in the Shabbos case, the next one. If you go to the Birkas HaMazon case, and there are a few others, like there are 6 altogether, where he paskins exactly like Rabbi Yaakov Marvej. Not only like him, but like that Shita. Again, the one case he disagrees because of his Rebbe. In Birkas HaMazon, that's where he gets a little bit distempered, as we would say. The Einonut Srichim, the issue about when you bench with 3, do you say Hashem, Hashem, or not? Einonut Srichim lechalomo Shrabbeinu Yaakov, Hatzadik Mimarvesh, calls him Hatzadik, but we don't need him. Velola Pitro, no, Sheshoa Leide Shalas Chalom. We don't need it. But that's clearly Bottle Barov. Shibbol HaLeket uses it. Again, every case the Shibbol HaLeket takes up is also a case with Rishonim on both sides, you know, that Rabbi Yaakov Marvesh took up. Shibbol HaLeket apparently recognizes this as an effective way of going. Before we proceed now to the big conclusion, let me mention one more section in Shibbol HaLeket, number 4, Din Arbat Somos. After he mentions the Taniyos Derabbanan that we do for the Churbanos Habayis, not Tainus Esther, at the end he says there's another Tainus that Klal Yisrael took upon in his own day. I don't know if some of you probably know this. It's about the Sreifas HaTalmud, the burning of the Talmud, which, interestingly, was not dated to a set date on the calendar. This was the case as a result of the trial of the Talmud in 1240. We think historically it happened in 1242. He has 1244 in Paris, in Sarfas, which is exactly right. Either, you know, these dates are not always exact. Some have suggested, I think quite cogently, there may actually have been two Sreifas. There was the in-town burning in 1242, and the larger French burning in 1244. They want to build a case based on Shmuel Eket. Not only is he right, he was reporting ahead of his time. But in any case, that's not listed as a date because you can't make up new Taniyos. It's called Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas because that's when it happened. Friday, Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas. And he explains here how they came to that Tainus. And he says the Chachmei Tzarfas, right, made a Sheilas Chalom. They wanted to know, it sounds like what we just read with Asar Ogei Malchus on Yom Kippur. Right? They sent Rabbi Shmuel, who was Migdolei HaTanoim, who knew how to get to Shamayim in some mystical way. That's part of the Hechalot literature too. It's a Gemara in Brachas Samach Aleph. It's all over the place. Right? They too went and asked the Sheilas Chalom, right? And they got a sign from heaven that this is a din, that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do, and therefore you have to accept it. So it's interesting, this Shibale HaLeket, now this is not, I mean, it's halachic in the sense that they're setting up a tainus, they're not paschating a shaila, but this means the fact that the Shibale HaLeket is you know, on board with Rabbi Yaakov Marvej is certainly much more than happenstance, right? And you take a look here, he says, Gam min ha-rabbonim shehayu sham shamanu, he says, we heard from people who were there, eyewitnesses, she'asu she'las chalom ladas in gzeirahi. They did a she'las chalom to verify that this was their fate. Sound just like what we had among the Asaru Gimachos, which again is hechalot based. Okay. So the question is, though, for the final item for our consideration, so, not the Rambam, not the Rashi, not the Ramban even, a little bit maybe derive it, Rabbi Yaakov of Marvej, but again, we'd like to know more about him. Is that all there is? So now I want to show you that perhaps from a somewhat unusual vantage point, we do have a series of discussions about dreams and halachic contexts from a different area that we almost haven't mentioned. And let me, without further ado, let's go right through them quickly. In number 9, Rabbi Yishaya Detrani, the Rid, Rabbi Yishaya Detrani, an Italian Chacham who died around 1230 or so, but he came to learn in Germany with one of the Balei HaTosfos. He knows all about Rabbeinu Tam's Torah from students who came back to France, to Germany from France. Tosfos Rid reads like a Tosfos. There's a parish on Chumash from the Rid that we have called Nimukei Chumash, which quotes a lot of Chachmei Ashkenaz. And even though in the latter part of his life he went to southern Italy and he dealt with what we call Ramoniot Jews, nonetheless, he knows this Ashkenazic Torah and he's treated the Ritvor calls him Rabbi Yishaya Ashkenazi. Now watch this. In Simen Kuf Yud Beis of his Tshuvas that were printed in the 70s and we reprinted, there's a Shaila about a lung adhesion. Again, very technical, but a big ongoing shaila about certain adhesions at different parts of the lungs, meaning that if that behemah had that adhesion after shechita, you can't eat it because it wouldn't have lived. It's called the una and the uma, this adhesion. So the big machlokus between the Rid and others, whether that adhesion is treif, or whether it's a treifa, or whether you can eat that animal, right? In other words, if you sheft an animal perfectly, but if the animal wasn't a healthy animal, as defined by halacha, you still can't eat it. It's a treifa. So the question is, was this particular adhesion a treifa that renders it not edible, al pi halacha, or was it, is it, can you be matir? The Rid took the stringent position, and he gives, it's a very long tshuva here, I really eviscerated it. He has many, many reasons. But towards the end of the tshuva, he says a couple of interesting things. Look what I underlined. He engaged a little pasuk speak, right? If you declare that adhesion okay, I say, based on the pasuk, you say it's a good adhesion, I don't think so. Okay, that's interesting in and of itself, right? But then he says, Harehu Ovein Avodah Zarah, you're getting the halacha a little bit wrong. Omachil Treifas LiYisrael. And now he says, for our purposes, he drops the bomb. Even the Gemara in Gittin write that you shouldn't rely on dream stuff in general. I just want you to know, after my 12 halachic proofs, Eliyahu zochor latov nidmeli bechalom. Eliyahu came to me in a dream. V'sha'alti yaspiv. And I asked him, my suffik, I have this big machlokas with the other chachamim, right? Al hadevek shemachshirim b'nei adam im ha-MS itam. He asked it very diplomatically. Are those poskim, he didn't say, I don't agree. Are those poskim who are allowing this adhesion to go through, to be kosher, not to render the animal treifa, are they right? The omali b'nei hasrach b'nei hadevek shelo b'makom rabusa treifa. Right? And Eliyahu said, you're right, they're wrong. Then he adds, Aval hasmach sheli al sugyo shitas halacha. I'm not relying on Eliyahu, I'm relying on my lomdus, which is expression, this shitas halacha, the rid always went with the gemaras. He says, I got gemaras. But just you should know, Eliyahu Anavi told me in a dream, I'm right. Now the rid, again, his material was only published in more recent years, but the rid is big. The rid is a, you know, student of Balei HaTosfos, and we have from him now all kinds of svarim, and he's used in halacha and so on and so forth. That's already very interesting. Right? Okay, that's one. Let me run two more by you and we'll get it together. Number 10 is what I call the Chulund dream as follows. I call it irreverently the Chulund dream, right, incorrectly. And we have a date on it. This is a German Balei HaTosfos, Rabbi Eliezer Reb Nosson of Mainz, and we even have a date, Bishnas Tov Kuf Yud Beis. And I'll just summarize for you. There was a Maisa, but again, you can read it. It's a very cute Maisa. Cute, it's a problematic Maisa. His son-in-law, Eliakim, and the Ravon was, you know, Godel Hador, and Eliakim is not mentioned as a big Rav, but apparently he knew something too, as we'll see. Right? There was a problem where one of the non-Jewish help took a Jewish scooper, you know, a scooper, a wine, kind of a ladle, and used it with kosher wine. But the moment the non-Jew touches the kli, it can be a problem. So the question that happened was, they apparently, they had a Shabbos meal, right? And they used some of that wine, where it turned out that the wine had been touched by the scooper, which the non-Jew had used. Again, it's a closed circuit here, but there's still a Yayin Esach problem. So the Radvaz, so the son-in-law reports this, and he says, I asked my son-in-law, was the scooper Noguv? Noguv means, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, if I have certain stoneware, if all the residue of what the non-Jew had put into that scooper has been dried out, so it's all gone, it's a kind of a blia question, the scooper can be used further. Because again, he wasn't doing it with not kosher wine, he was doing it with kosher wine, but in a different... But if that scooper had any residue, any moisture from the non-Jew's use, and it went into the kosher barrel of wine that the Jews at the table were using, it's big trouble, right? And Yayin Esech isn't bottled so easily, and so on and so forth. Then the Ravan says, after I ate, I went to sleep. I called the Chulund dream. Uboi lai mori chami. My father-in-law, my Rebbe, whose name was also Rebbe Yochim, by the way, a famous Rebbe Yochim, right, came to me in a chalom, v'haya korei, and he was quoting me, psukim in Yeshayahu, and Amos, about chazire ya'ar, about goyim drinking wine, and about wild boar. I don't know what he's trying to tell me. So he thought in his dream that, what was he trying to tell him? 1152 is just a few years after the Second Crusade. He thought his father was trying to warn him, the goyim are coming again, God forbid, right? The chazire ya'ar, the wilde chayas are coming after you. But when he awoke, he says, he realized that what his father was trying to tell him. What was his father trying to tell him? That the wine that you guys drank at lunch was like the wine of Goyim, like Chazer. It wasn't kosher. That somehow the psak was a mispsak. So says the Ravon, interestingly here, he says, right, so what did he do? Shalom ayah kli naguf. He says that, you know, the thing wasn't properly dried out. It had the residue, which is problematic. The Ravon says, I got up from my nap. I took the kli. I don't know if he did it on Shabbat, wait till after, but he took the kli and he moistened it. And it took 2 days and a night until it was naguv, until it dried out. Meaning what his son-in-law had reported, I don't know what he did to him later, but okay, forgive him, right? What the son-in-law had reported was imprecise. And in fact, all the wine in the barrel where the scooper went into could not be consumed by Jews. And he says that he got to that psak, v'yadati kilo yofe horesi, v'asarti es hayayin shebechofes, he asked the whole rest of the barrel, and he made everybody fast a little bit, givalt. Now again, here's a dream that's impacting the halacha. What's the difference between this, though, and the Ritz dream? First of all, well, a couple of differences. Yeah? Right, it's a less moment. That's very good. It's a less momentous venue. Less momentous. Good. What else?
He followed it up.
Oh, right. He didn't rely just on the dream. He made a lab test. Good. Good. Right. This is a beer to clarify. What else? Anything else about the dream itself? Anything you see different? All right. We don't know what the Rid prepared either, but good. Oh, it's following. Good, good. In other words, if I'm the Rid, you know, again, this is things that we can only imagine. If I'm the Rid and Eliyahu comes to me, right, the Rid might not have met Eliyahu before that dream, right? And not only does Eliyahu come to him in the dream, but what happens? He talks to him, right? And as they have a conversation. I told him I asked him the Shaila, he gave me the answer. In this dream of the Ravon, what happened? His father-in-law, his Rebbe, came to him. And it was not a talkie. It was a one-way dream, right? In other words, and gave him some message. So, Marshalamad Davar Domeh, you know, the issue of a somatic dream. You have a big problem that you're thinking about. You go to sleep and you get some follow-up. So the Ravon knew the Shiloh wasn't a simple Shiloh. He wasn't 100% sure. So sure enough, right, as if his Rebbe's giving him guidance. Whereas the Rid doesn't say he was troubled, doesn't say what happened, right? Maybe he did prepare, right? It's a little bit, it's a talkie. The reason I'm telling you this is because Lahavdil, and again, Chochma Bagoyim Tamin, not saying there's an influence here, exactly in this period in medieval Europe, there are discussions about the nature of dreams, visions versus dreams, right? And again, I won't mention all the sources now. By the way, folks, and we're coming to the close, but I left you my email here for a reason. All this stuff is written up, and I'll be happy to send you a copy, and you can go, you can stalk it, you know, you can find all the mistakes. But some of these other things that I'm not going to discuss here at all, you can also find there. What's the difference between a vision and a dream, right? In general society, it depends who's doing the dreaming, right? A plain person versus a godel, lahavdil, right? What the discussion in the dream is, what the issue is, and the somatic data is. In other words, if I ate a load of bad deli and I have a dream about fireworks, you know, so we understand there's some problem, right, so to speak. If I ate chulent and I don't know what I ate, okay. If it's, you know, sort of cleaner, right, it's less somatic, right? Never mind your correct point that this is certainly only a biror. Never mind the point that the Ravon didn't act because of the dream, right? So let me give you one more, and that's in sources number 11 and 12. Sources number 11 and 12 are both talking about the same dream. This is, again, if I have to pick a text that I like very much here, that I like them all, this is a great one. And let's read the first version. Matsasi b'shem Rabbeinu Baruch shesiper shepam achas ochal Rabbeinu Ephraim dag shekarim barbuta, or burbata, or something. Might be the dreaded sturgeon, not clear. There are people actually written articles on what a barbuta is. You can go nuts. But anyway, it's very interesting. I mean, Ubalail, anyway, he had a fish, which the data here, and that's why it might not be sturgeon, the data here is, we know who these people are. Rabboruch is Rabboruch of Magensa, maybe the author of the Zemer Baruch Kel Elyon, definitely the author of a sefer called Sefer HaChochma that's completely lost, except the quote of Sefer Mordechai, a big German Baal HaTosas dying in Mainz, dies in 1221, voluminous Sfarim, voluminous great Dayon. That's who Rabbeinu Baruch is. Rabbeinu Ephraim is Rabbeinu Ephraim of Regensburg, a student of Rabbeinu Tam, a German student of Rabbeinu Tam, mentioned in Tosas quite a lot. Great Paitan, we said Piyutim by him, Erev Yom Kippur. We have Piyutim from him in my face, Rova Hakan, a lot of Shlishiyot. Anyway, Gedolei Gedolim here, right? Mentioned in Tosas, whenever Tosas calls Rabbeinu Ephraim, it's usually Rabbeinu Ephraim of Regensburg, right? So here's the story. Rabbeinu Tam and others in France allowed this barbuta fish, whatever it is. The Germans never allowed it. Rabbeinu Ephraim was back home in Regensburg, and he said, you know what? My Rebbe Rabbeinu Tam, Kedai Hulis Moholov, I am convinced we're going to allow it. So he allowed the fish. They ate the fish in his house, right? But again, it's a big machlokes, so it may have been in his house, but this is already a bigger issue. And look what happened. Ubalaila nearly zakein echod. At night, so they're reporting, other gedolim reporting what Rabbeinu Ephraim told them. At night, I was approached in a dream by Zokhein Echad Baal Seva, an elderly gentleman with a beautiful hadrasponim, or Baal Seyar, in the other text says, Seyar Lavon, Epsa, Achosheva Yashena Yid, obviously a special person. V'hadar panim megudal zakan. I was approached in a dream by this person. V'hevi li kupa malei ashratzim. And he brought me a basket full of creepy crawlers, God forbid, right? You know, crawling things that are certainly not kosher. V'omalo, and he reports, and this great person told him, kum echol, esman kint, eat this stuff. You know, eat this creepy stuff, right? V'nir tama od, right? And he was very afraid. The other text says, he got angry. What do you mean, eat that stuff? Omalo v'halo shratzim heim. I can't eat that. It's not kosher. Those are, you know, no suffix about that. You can't get that on in the heksher, right? Omalo, kach elu mutarim kamo hashratzim shachalta hayom. Well, you should know, these are about as mutter as the stuff that you allowed today. It's a sign of Regensburg being reported by Baruch Magensa. It's in the Sefer Or Hazaruah number 12. It's virtually the same story. Again, it's Ephraim of Yitzhami Regensburg by name on the line, being reported by Rabbi Yudah Chosid. Go Yisrael reporting this story. Finished the first thing. Bahakitso, when he woke up, Yodash Eliyahu Zachor Latov Niglei Lov, the gentleman with the beautiful Hadras Ponim, with the advice, giving him this guidance, was not some interloper, it was Eliyahu. Umehayom v'hala pirish mehem. Never ate that fish again. In the other text it says, they broke the kalim. They, you know, it's all earthenware kalim. They broke the kalim. Now, again, we're starting to get a little serious here, right? Interestingly, by the way, a lot of Germans, right? The Rid learned in the Rhineland, learned in Spira and Spire with Rav Simcha Misha of Spira, the Ravon in Mainz. Now, let me ask you just quickly. Reb Ephraim's dream is comparable to which one? You know, Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. Two of them are more similar. This one is like, much more like the Rid's dream, right? First of all, it's a talkie. It's not his Rebbe, right? Also, it's different than Ra'avon. Why? Because it was very nicely pointed out. The Rabbi Kel pointed out that Ra'avon did an experiment. Here, what does Ephraim of Regensburg do? Breaks the plates. You know, we're not eating anymore. Breaks the plates. Now, by the way, it also says in the second text, Chol haporesh mi'ochlam yonuchu lo brachos al rosho. So, is it a psak based on the dream, or it's a hanhage? Right? Is it a real hachra, or is it just? If Elio comes to you in a dream and says, don't eat the fish, better not fool around with those fish. You know, don't take it, throw it back. But again, these are great Bali HaTosfos. They seem to like dreams in halachic contexts. So much so the Notabi Yehuda in 13 and his son, I give you the Mara Makomos, the Notabi Yehuda is very upset by this. He says, what are we playing around with dreams? He basically says, why didn't Rabbeinu Tam get a dream? What's wrong with Rabbeinu Tam? He should have had a competing dream. He says, you can't be mashkiach in any of these things, the Notabi Yehuda. But again, the Notabi Yehuda is writing in the 18th century, and he's coming from a different perspective. But these Rishonei Ashkenaz are big into this stuff. Now, what's the problem, though, with these dreams? Why should we not yet link these Rishonei Ashkenaz to what Yaakov Mimar Vejda? It's not a formal Shailas Chalom. But why should we perhaps be a little bit more hesitant or, you know, conservative with a small c about these dreams, yeah?
They weren't asking for the dreams, they just came to them.
Oh, so first of all, they didn't seek the dreams out. Although, you know, if the dream fits where it's interesting, that's one. What else is true about these dreams? You know, don't take from the snake oil salesman what he sells you until you check it. In this case, I'm the metaphysical snake oil salesman, right? What's the other problem here? Well, what's common to all these Ashkenazic dreams? There are two things that are common. Two, you know, not halachic characteristics, two physical characteristics or logistical characteristics. What's that?
Eating.
So first of all, it's all about eating, right? Now, it comes to eating, afilu chamor shel pinchas ben yor chul dav zayin, right? Even the tzaddikim's behemoths don't eat non-gemaisid food, right? And, you know, for Jews to eat, God forbid, not kosher food, they'd sooner, you know, vomit it all up, you know, they, right? So food is a particular sore point. Not that it's not a halachic context, but when it comes to food, we're nuts. Al pi halacha, we're nuts, right? Al pi mesora, al pi halacha, al pi arbabis, al pi azedis. We're supposed to be very skeptical. Okay, that's one. And what else is common in all these dreams? After the fact is true. Yeah, except the barbute is a big Indian. The barbute is a big Indian. And the Rash Mishans is unen, I mean the Simcha Mishpira, unen um is also a big Indian. In fact, I put in, I ungestopped in between 10 and 11, that in a Paris manuscript, I once saw the Raviyah, that Eliyahu came and talked about Una and Uma. Yaakov Marvej has it. The Raviyah never had a dream at all. Somebody gave him a dream. You know, again, that's what happens. What else is common, though? What? Yeah. Oh, all three are Machmir. It's very, you know, using dreams lahachmir is not exactly paskening shilas by dreams, right? In all cases, it's food, and we don't allow anything. So let me show you the last source, and the last two sources, and we'll sum it all up. Here you have two pieces from our Ami Rutenberg. One that I copied nicely, the other one that I wrote you in my scroll. Now you see why I Xerox a lot, right? Rami Rutenberg, who died in 1293, again a German, but he learned in northern France, and the fact is there's much more of this in northern France than we have time to talk about amongst the Balei HaTosis, right? Rami Rutenberg has two inyonim in Dine Mominis, where he says he either got his psak or changed his psak based on what he learned from the Baal HaChalom. Who is the Baal HaChalom? There's a Rashi in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed, it's clear that's what he means. The Malach who's in charge of Chalomos. As the Maharam is saying, point by Maharam, again, Piyutim also, but me, Kimaram, hundreds of Chuvis, Posek Achron, Godel Hador, right? Me, Kimaram. Two places he says, I based my psak, or I changed my psak, based on what the Baal HaChalom said. Here it's not clear, did he invite him or did he just get him? But in any case, and here it's not a matter of kul and chumrin. Dini Mominus, there's always a loser and a winner, right? That's why there may not be Edom Zomim in 2 days in Tosas Makas Daf Dalet. Are there Edom Zomim in Dini Mominus, right? Because, you know, one man's loss, the other one litigant's loss, the other litigant's gain. So it's not a matter of chumrin. It's a matter of psak halacha. So you'll read, I'll just give you the punchline here. This is actually a dream that he had when he was being held captive towards the end of his life. He's a political prisoner. As you may know, he died in jail, unfortunately, and his body remained in jail for years till it was redeemed, and he's buried next to the person who redeemed him in the Vorm's Beis HaKvaros. I couldn't go in there, I'm a Kayan, but I have pictures. It's really there, and that didn't get bombed out either. A lot of the Beis HaKvaros got bombed out. Not this. Right? But Migdal and Zinsheim in some tower, and he had a whole shaila here about a poel who backed out. Right, a worker who backed out. So all kinds of halachas did the worker back out because an onus happened, he got sick, or they just feel like quitting. Right? And, you know, you contracted, what must you pay him for the time that he backed out or not, and so on and so forth. He changed his whole psak. I gave it to you in the underline, right, where he changed his whole opinion, and he quotes me, Pi Baal HaChalom B'Migdal and Zinsheim. He says, I reconsidered my whole position because of what I learned from the Baal HaChalom in Zinsheim. And towards the end, V'nirali Halacha L'maisa Kemo Shehochachti Mipi Baal HaChalom. Now here, what's interesting, so this is not about food, and it's not l'chumra. What's interesting, though, the Maharam took the Baal Chalom's information, and he thought about it. Right? So again, what seems to be happening here, Echshehu, is that these Baalei HaTosfos are not using the Chalom to paskin the Shaila initially, and even like Yaakov Marvej, they're using it to solve long-standing problems. By the way, these two shitas exist before too. And Maharam apparently had been flipping back and forth at some point in his lengthy career. But what caused him to call the question was the Baal HaChalom. The second case is similar, and interestingly enough, it's found in the Mordechai to Bava Kama, the first simon. It opens up the Mordechai to Bava Kama, the first simon in Bava Kama. So Shaila, when you have workers who are working in commodities, must you pay them cash? Or can you pay them in the commodity in which they're working? They're picking apples, give them bushels of apples. So the problem with that is the apples rot. They may not be able to sell 20 bushels of apples. You know, a little harder to carry around than $100, right? So the Gemara has discussion. What about things like Kevin Vikash, right? The sort of things that never, you know, get stale. Hay and other kind of things. Straw, you know, they're not convenient, certainly, but they don't really get ruined. Anyway, here he says as well, you can look at my scroll, when it comes to Tevin and Kash, Lamori Reb Meir Nira Bechalom Dafka B'Tevin V'Kash, only there but not in other cases. The Mordechai quotes, his Rebbe said, I had a Chalom and the Baal HaChalom directed me in this direction. Now again, the Shitas exist independent of the Baal HaChalom, but they're there. And that leads me finally, all those little Tosfosim that I mentioned, including the one in Nun Tes, Tosfosim in a few places in Shas, when the Gemara talks about baskols, right, in the case of Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachomim, in the case of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, the Gemara says the baskol came out in Paschal like Beis Hillel. So what does Tosfos say? It was already gepaskined in learning, you know, in real halacha, but the baskol sort of nailed it. You know, it confirmed the diagnosis. But nonetheless, dafka amongst Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rishonei Ashkenaz, we find a real affinity for this material. And unlike Rabbi Yaakov Marvej, which is a fantastic work, we know who these Baalei HaTosfos are. And by the way, that may help us to understand. The Baalei HaTosfos in question, especially these Germans, but also some of the Frenchmen, this I've written about separately, they're not mystikanim, they're not mystics, but they are very comfortable with use of sod in what I would call non-Kabbalistic context. Now, they're not looking to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're not looking to unlock the secrets of the world, but they are comfortable with certain types of practical, what I'll call heavenly guidance, as indicated by these Tosas as well. And if you go through the roster, the particular names that I've mentioned, in each case, this is not the only particular example. By the way, Yetzdech Vashtana, now we can understand very well. Whatever exactly happened with Unisana Tokef, is it an old piyut that was reinstated? Was it written earlier, later? How did Unisana Tokef happen? Somebody in Ashkenaz got a chalom that this is what, they didn't have the tape running on Rosh Hashanah there, right? And who records it? Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn in the Sefer Or Zaruah, who was one of the couple of texts we did here coming from Sefer Or Zaruah. So these kinds of things, I don't want to say they're ubiquitous amongst Chachmei Ashkenaz, but Rishonei Ashkenaz seem to have a much greater sense of the possibility of using these things in certain contexts. So, and I'll happily take questions either now at the end publicly, and I held you a long time, but I hope it was worth it a little bit. I'll take them publicly, I'll take them privately. Again, you have my email, so you can get the whole thing. I can gladly send you the off print, what we call tadpis elektroni. Anyway, what we have here is most Rishonim, again, the Radvaz, so the Radvaz therefore can say, Ich bin Asfari, but ich falozichen on the Ashkenazim. In other words, the Radvaz now doesn't look quite as outlandish as we might have thought. Not outlandish at all, but when we started. But the Radvaz is in the 16th century, so again, things have changed, and you're getting, trying to get knowledge from wherever you can get it. Within the Rishonim, the Rambam, I don't think would support this at all. Rashi is an interesting question, even though he's the father of the Baalei HaTosfos in question here too. Even the Ramban, I don't think would necessarily support this. The Ravid is an interesting question. There's something in Provence, but again, that's the nature of these Chachamim. If they have a nitiyah, if they have an interest in these kinds of, and these are hechalot things, again, this whole Baal HaChalom, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it's all over hechalot too. The Gemara has one or two references. This additional literature has many more references. These Rishonim apparently were not uncomfortable. Again, there are limitations. Doesn't happen every day of the week, although I think we've been able to show, and there are other examples too in straight learning, many other examples, where they quote the Baal HaChalom, where halacha per se isn't at stake, but it's still very, very striking. They're willing to use this material. Again, what you have to say in terms of the problem of Lo Bashamayim Hi, it's not a hachro'o, it's some type of a birur, I don't mean stage direction in a superficial sense, I mean direction of how the Baal Halacha should try to figure this out. And they do review what the Baal Chalom tells them sometimes. Again, in the case of Eliyahu, they broke the plates. But the Maharam seems to have reconsidered. So, but these are clearly more than just somatic experiences. And again, completely, the boich, the kishka, it's much more than that. I would again suggest that we might productively look at what's happening around here too, in terms of what you would call a vision, right? And here the vision is not to give you a religious experience. The vision is more to give you a sense of the material. But again, and the final point here is very important. Eliyahu coming to you, well, it comes in a dream. Anything that happens in a dream may also be possible to say, who's running the dream? Who are the participants in the dream? The person having the dream is also participating. So in that sense, a baskal coming, the person just hearing it. A dream is still being produced by the dreamer, right? However you were zocha to that dream, whether somatically or visionarily, whatever that word is, right? I have to conjugate vision, right? Through a vision, right? You are the Baal HaChalom in that sense. So it's from one Baal HaChalom to the other. That raises the interesting question, right? That goes back to what we mentioned from the Chidah. Nevuah, without HaKadosh Baruch Hu calling you, you can't have. The Chalom, obviously it has to be somehow joined, but is that more of a human endeavor? Right? That's an interesting question I don't have the answer to. In any case, folks, I hope this was of some interest. Oh, and the final connection to Leil Hoshana Rabbah. So you look in the Mishnah Berurah, there are more. The Darchei Moshe mentions that tonight some call the Leil, well, it's called the Leil HaChitum. It's the Kvittel, right? That's the night before the Chasima. So the Darche Moshe mentions from the Ramban and Chumash and the Pasuk Sartzi Lamei Oivehem that there were some mystics, some people who knew these things, that they went in the night on the moonlight to see their shadow, and that would give them an indication of how their Gzar Din would be. Again, that's not for me, or for you. Well, if you have a minig, but and the Mishnah Berurah says also leave that to the Anistar Hashem Elokeinu. So they quote the Ramban as a big authority on this. The Ramban's Perush on Sartzi Lamei Oivehem. You look at that Pasuk. Ramban is a Gresta Makubal. The one who had it before the Ramban was someone named Rabbi Elazar Mivurim. Rabbi Elazar, author of Sefer HaRokeach, a German who was Mechassidi Ashkenaz, which is also interesting here, but who also wrote Tosas to Riz Tos on Bava Kama, wrote not only Sefer HaRokeach that we have published, the Sefer, but they published recently, over the last few years, from Kisvayad, all kinds of Sifrei Halacha, all over Issev HaHeter, tremendous stuff. A Rebbe, perhaps, of the Or HaZaruah, again, who's into this type of Leil HaChitum in the very deep sense that the Darche Moshe, who understands it, is talking about. So again, we have to sort of maybe reaccustom ourselves a little bit to know even more about how these Rishonim operated, in the best sense of the word, to appreciate their position in terms of Halomos. Taka, good kvitl, a good nerv yomtiv. Thank you very much. Yeah.